Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the debrief. It's Dave O'Neill here with my COVID editions, explaining again. Normally I talk to comics before and after live gigs, but I'm a Melburnian, so there's no live gigs going on at the moment. It's an absolute shocker down here. And so what I've been doing is ringing comics, seeing how they're going, and I'm going to call Mandy Nolan, who lives in Mullumbimby. She is the absolute queen of comedy on the North Coast. What do you call it? The near Byron Bay, that sort of area. That she's been doing comedy for a long time up there, and she's very funny. She's a force to be reckoned with. Let's see how she's going.
Hello, Dave. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Good to speak
very
to you.
Good.
We're recording, yeah. So I record straight from the get-go.
That's good. Right on it. No wasting any time.
No. And I'll explain in the intro that you're the queen of the Byron Bay area in terms of comedy. But how long have you been doing comedy? About 20 years at least?
Well, probably longer. If you never really tell people how long you've been doing comedy, because it makes you always sound a bit shit. So some people put years on and I take years off.
Oh, yeah.
So I started when I was 17 and I'm 52. So I think that's 35 years.
Wow.
But you know, when you do it, like when I started out, I did it and then I'd have breaks for 6 months.
Yeah.
And then I'd come at it again and then I'd have a year off. So I didn't start doing it full time till I was 28. But from 17, for 10 or 11 years, I toyed around with it and did it.
And where did you pretty start?
Brisbane?
Yeah, right, okay.
I started about the same time as Paul Brash and around that time.
I know
time.
Paul Brash, yeah, right.
Yeah. It was pretty hard. It was really hard going.
The sit-down comedy club in the old place?
Yeah, I had a weird start because I started as a feminist, in feminist, started out of feminist theatre from the University Review. I sort of came at it from that angle.
Yeah,
so
right.
I was at uni. I was part of a university production. And I got booked straight off. I did like a 5-minute funny kind of story. And then I got booked straight away in a job. And everything I did after that, I kept getting booked because there were just no women doing it.
No.
And so I got paid from the minute I started. So I was never a beginner.
You never did the open mic? There wouldn't have been much of an open mic circuit then anyway.
No, there wasn't. No. Nobody really knew what that was. So,
no.
And I tended to perform at poetry nights. Remember when everyone was into the whole kind of stand-up poetry?
Yeah, yeah.
And so everyone was so sick of the poets. By the time I came on, I was like a rock star.
Yes.
Because I was just talking and I wasn't being a wanker.
Yeah.
And it made me think I was a lot better than I was. And the poets thought I was a lot better than I was.
Well, it's like getting a laugh in church. You know, when the priest would crack a gag, he was like, oh, Yeah, I know exactly. That's not dissimilar to Billy Connolly and he's doing folk clubs, you know what I mean, where he would tell stories in between his songs and they'd all think he was fantastic. Yeah,
it's a trick.
Yeah, so then when did you move to the Byron Bay area? When was that?
I lived here I was about 22, 23.
Wow. Yeah, right.
And then I was only ever staying for 6 months, but the 6 months I just kept pushing it. Going, oh, it's really good, but
yeah,
you know, dropping out was really good.
Well, back then, I remember going to Byron in the 80s, and it was so beautiful back then. I mean, it still is beautiful, but as we know now, there's traffic jams and, you know.
True.
It's like an extension of the Gold Coast, as one of the bakers told me there one night.
Kind of true. And it is, it was a magical time to be here because it was quiet and it was, you know, it was beautiful. And you were, you know, you had this amazing place, particularly over winter to yourself. And I, you know, all the houses I lived in when I came here, like I was here. It's always nice when you're hit, when you are somewhere before it's hip.
Yes.
You know, yeah. And that's what it was like. And your thumbs kind of, and I wasn't a surfer, you know, but you kind of had a feeling it was something a bit remarkable about the place. And all the places I lived in had, I lived on the beach, like literally on the beach in amazing apartments for next to nothing, right? I'd walk across the road or I'd just go out my front door and walk down the steps onto the sand. Like, you had some pretty amazing places to live. Just pretty nice lifestyle, I have to say. Like, you know, I'd smoke a joint, a cup of tea on the beach, breakfast, and go home and, you know.
And did you to create your own work then, did you? Or did you just do some hippie sort of gigs? Or what happened? Like, with your stand-up?
I did have to create my own work. I did a lot of hippie gigs. Like, I did a lot of stuff out at Nimbin. I did more poetry stuff at the local pub. And then I just started. But people here, because there was no one. I was always lucky because there was no one doing what I was doing.
Yeah, yeah.
So I ended up going to, I just get weird gigs. Like, can you MC the local peace flag activists, you know,
kind of, you know.
Can you do the, we're having a big nude protest. It's a lot of protests. Can you front the nude protest? I'm like, oh, my God, that is like a dream.
Yeah.
500 naked people on the beach, fucking best gig of my life, you know, because right. you're going, like, and, you know, and I have to admit, everyone here looks pretty good in the nude. Like, it's a pretty good nude-looking crowd. And you're just, like, going, you can, and you have absolute power at a protest because it's more than a gig because you're going, okay, everyone's got, helicopters were going over, so I go, okay, let's do down-face dog. So, you know, I've got 500 assholes facing Channel 10.
It's great.
as opposed to the assholes facing us. So,
so when did Byron start to change? Like, was it 10 years ago, you reckon, or 15, 10?
You know, I think it happened so kind of, I think it's happened very gradually, although some people would say it happened suddenly, that it's almost hard to find that point of where it changed completely. But, I mean, I started running gigs here. I had, I started running rooms and I went, okay, I'll just bring, because I had a lot of friends from the circuit. I said, I'll just put them on here. But then I realized, you know, the hardest thing, I can MC it, but I didn't have any support acts.
Yeah.
And that was the biggest challenge. And you can't afford to fly an act in and accommodate them and give them a fee.
Yeah, you can't afford to get a support act. Yeah.
And then pay for a support act. So I went, I'll just make them. You know, they can't be that hard.
Oh, right. So you started running workshops and stuff.
Yeah, then I started running workshops ostensibly just to make support acts. And then I realised, like, I've taught over 2,000 people now and about 12 of them are working.
Yeah, wow.
So it's not a gradient rate.
Yeah, but still, we know stand-up hard. So that's probably really normal. Yeah.
I could probably make that. And what I was creating then was, it was, I thought I could help, you know, that to become a 20-minute act, you know, I realised, took a lot longer.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, so I would create a couple of good 5-minute acts.
Yeah, yeah.
And I put two or three, or I put two of them on, and I'd just do a bit longer. So I just kind of worked around it, and that was kind of great. So that, there was nothing like that happening there then. It was, I think the Blues Festival had just started.
Yeah, right.
I went to the first couple of Blues Festivals here, which was so amazing. Yeah. Like watching, you know, these incredible acts out of New Orleans and stuff in a room of 400 people. You know, and now you stand in crowds, you know, to see
thousands.
Someone like, you know, 10,000 at James Brown or something. So, it's pretty amazing. And I have to admit, I kept thinking, I never felt like I really, it was just, look, honestly, if I was 28-year-old, 30-year-old me now, my career would be really different.
Yeah.
It's just that, it would have been, I kind of felt like the industry, I would have been accepted more readily into the industry at that age. I've always been a bit of an outsider.
Yeah.
And I never quite fitted in with what anything promoters or what they were looking for. It was never me.
You know, true.
I was always on the edge like that. And I was kind of aware of that. And I was thinking, I went, well, I kind of missed it by about 20 years.
Yeah.
Which is kind of interesting because you go, and that being the case, you kind of, I think I've created a kind of outsider comedy, which has a whole other kind of thing about, you know, being a comic, to go, hey, you know, you don't have to wait at home for the industry to roll out, your career for you. There's not just one pathway. You can make your own pathway. Yeah, there's an audience, you know, as long as you're funny, you know, and you know that, and you've got ideas and you have a kind of a integrity and authenticity in that, that will give you a longevity and you'll find your crowd and you just got to think outside the box a bit more. And I think, you know.
Yeah, that's what you've done.
And I had to do it because otherwise, I'm a country girl and it's always hard. You know, I wasn't an urban person. I grew up in the country. I'm happier living in the country. And I moved to Sydney for a while with one of my husbands, I think the second one. And
You talk about that in your stand-up, but
yeah. Yeah, there's like three husbands and about a trillion boyfriends on the way up to that. I moved to Sydney and it was really weird. I had this weird feeling for me being in the city, this thing would happen where I felt, it was like being compressed, like weed.
Yeah, right.
But I didn't get stronger. I felt kind of weird. Like I felt I felt myself shrinking in a sense, you know, of feeling smaller and not really knowing who I was. And there was this kind of feeling of where I sit in my regional area where my expansive, loud sense of self really, it just feels where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah, right.
Do you know what I mean? And for me, I couldn't, as much as it would have been so much better for my career to live in Melbourne or Sydney, even though I love both those cities and being there, to actually have to live there, I just couldn't do it. I actually ended up with a health condition where my heart went really weird. So I'm like a real hippie saying this. I got like,
You got sad heart.
Yeah, I got atrial fibrillation where my heart would go into the wrong beat.
Oh yeah.
And I had to get cardioverted so many times and I felt like my heart just wouldn't go into the right rhythm. Eventually the cardiologist said, you know, there was no reason for it. It's very medical, no reason. They said, you've got an aberrant heart. And I went, oh, I could have told you that with my 400 husbands.
Yeah.
And then interestingly, after all that, I kind of moved back and the whole thing, like it stopped happening.
Yeah, that's like and stress. I don't know what, stress induced.
It was like really, yeah. And I went, oh, fuck, clearly. Clearly, I have to live here. And that's kind of been, you know, that thing of actually just finding your own way and how you're going to do it, which I actually really, I love. There have been moments where you've got to be so careful not to fall into resentment and to go, look, I'm really good. Why hasn't this happened for me? Because I think a lot of us do that sometimes.
Natural. Yeah.
And you know that funny thing? Someone did this recently. I was at the Comedy Store. And the MC, lovely bloke, and he really loves my work. And a few MCs do this. And it's meant as a compliment that they'll go, please make her welcome. She's one of the best comics in the country, right? And they're thinking, fuck, Kitty Flanagan's here.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's a surprise. And
Julia Morris is about to come on.
Yeah, they're coming out. And they go, and Mandy Nolan, I can hear everyone going, oh. Quite funny. And that's part of the story of my career. I'm really, she's all right, but who the fuck is that?
But you win them over. You win them over.
Well, I recognize that point. Every time they introduce me, I had to say, oh, fuck, how disappointing. It's not Kitty Flanagan. And they all laughed.
In terms of creating your own work and finding your own path, we've got to talk about your Women Like Us shows that you do with Ellen Briggs. Because that's a great example of you creating your own audience, basically, isn't it?
Absolutely. And it's really about recognizing your audience and going, okay.
Well, the title's so good, Women Like Us.
We thought about that because that went, well, look, that means women like us. I mean, they're like us and you're part of our tribe. Women, you know, we're going to pull you into our tribe. And there's that sense of belonging.
And so to explain to people, you just go into country towns, you just do a show in the theatre or in the hall, and you basically get a lot of women coming along.
Yeah, mainly women. Yeah. We get men that come along that didn't want to come along that go, oh, I'm really glad I came along because I thought it was just women. So, and in the end, they really enjoy it.
Yeah.
So that's been really good. But I think we've done about 150 shows now. And I think what it is we packaged it. Both, you know, Ellen Briggs and I knew that most of those regions, that we don't have names that are recognisable. And you have to kind of, I think the main thing is that you've got to really know who you are and how other people perceive you. Because if I go Mandy Nolan and Ellen Briggs, like, nobody gives a fuck.
Yeah.
But if we put it together with a poster and we package it and they go women like us, you start to create a brand of that identifies to that audience. And that's kind of how we went out there. But, well, what feel are we taking out there? Because, and you know what, a lot of that came from Eleanor and I and a lot of women in the industry had worked with Puppetry of the Penis.
Yeah, that's a support act. Yeah,
support acts. And, you know, I really learn a lot from working with Simon and Friendy, in the sense that I went, wow, look what they're doing. You know, they've created a brand to put, you know, they've created who they are, even though, you know, they're my favourite ones are doing that show, is almost irrelevant to the brand of the show.
Yeah.
And it's about who, we're very different to that. We're not emulating that. But I love what they did. And I went, well, we could be doing our own shows. And going into regions where, you know, you've got to get against that thing, you know, for us as people that have been, you know, ostensibly club comics and corporate comics, you know, the odd festival show, but we, you know, we're not comics people see on TV. And that's the first question people go now. Are you on TV?
Yeah.
Can I find you on YouTube? Are you on, just some shit clips of me, but I'm, you know, and you have to work against that in a sense. You have to recognize it and go, well, how do I create something else? So that's how we created Women Like Us. And look, it just took off. And it just hit a note. And so we kind of then farmed the audiences around us. And then those women who came to our shows, they're incredibly loyal. And they would go, hey, we're going to this place, Bathurst. Do you know anyone there? And they'd surely go, Bathurst, my sister lives there.
Yeah.
Now, Helen, get a table. Helen's got 20 people. And
I love it. And it's all, I bet you it's all on Facebook. A lot of it's on Facebook.
All on Facebook.
Yeah.
So I still do it because my background's in media as a journalist. And so I know what I'm doing when it comes to writing media releases and doing PR, and that's really helped.
With
what we do.
Yeah.
But it's also knowing that getting those conversations going are really important, and creating that sense of community, because if you really talk to those women and they become part of our crowd, they're on our Facebook, we chat to them all the time, part of our community, they will pay it forward for you.
Exactly. And you talk directly to them too in your stand-up. Yeah. You and Ellen both, you're both women in that same world. So you're talking, and it's like the perfect audience in a way, because they're like you. You're like them. So you connect.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you connect. Yeah.
So that one's really good. I've got a new touring show that I've put together, which is slightly different, with another woman that I work with. She's not a comic. She's an Irish woman who's a singer-songwriter. She's about 10 years younger than me, about 41, 42. And we call it the Country Witches Association.
Oh, great.
CWA.
Yeah.
And so that one is like a real mixed genre. We don't do funny songs. So I said, let's not do, I'm a really good comic, you're a really good musician, let's not fuck this up.
Yeah.
It's really political, and I get to do my really political stuff.
Oh, that's
really
good.
I've got really full-on political feminist lefty shit that I can't do anywhere else. I couldn't do it in my Women Like Us show because a lot of people would walk out. I can't do it in a comedy club because it's not going to roll. It's fun, but it's my edge, and I get to do the stuff, my harder stuff, and it's funny.
Yeah,
and
great.
Her stuff's really mean. Like, her stuff's so deep and beautiful, and she's very political too, but we're also fun. And then we get the audience to set the agenda. That kicked off. Like, as soon as we did it, I went, we don't know what this show is. It just kind of grew out of the ether, out of our friendship, and bang. And the mixed genre nature of that, because it can sit in a comedy festival, but it can also sit in a music festival.
Yeah.
Which had us actually going to, this year when we were at the Gilded Balloon in Edinburgh, we had a...
Oh, wow.
We had an agent from Nashville who was really interested in putting us into festivals in Ireland and Scotland and straight after that. So we actually had this really great run about to happen.
Yeah, then COVID.
Like a lot of people, it capitulated. But soon we're going to go to the Petersham Bolo in Sydney for 50 people.
What's happened with COVID up in Byron Bay? Is it all, because I'm in Melbourne where it's a lockdown, but is it all, it's all relaxed now, is it, in Byron or...?
Look, you would think so. Byron's always pretty relaxed. Someone had like a big dwarf party up in the hills recently, 1,000 people.
Wow.
People don't believe it here too, because they call it the scamdemic. They're like, you know, this is the unvaccinated people. They're like, no, they've just made it up. You want
to? I was talking to Will Anderson, who's moved to your area, and he was saying they're trying to rip down the 5G towers. The 5G.
Yeah, they're so paranoid. The funniest thing they've done, right, about the 5G rallies, and they're really full on about it, is they were having all these rallies and protests. They didn't get a huge turnout. And I mean, the problem is a lot of those people that tend to be more conspiratorial and anti-5G and anti-vax tend to live in the hills where there's very little coverage. And if they actually had 5G, they would have actually found out about the rally. But unfortunately, they're still on 3G and it just doesn't work. Go up there. No, so they really, it's kind of like, I did have a little laugh about that.
Now, I'm trying to remember when I first met you, because I do that on this podcast.
Yeah.
I reckon, God, I did gigs in Byron. Wow. I can't. Did I meet you in Byron? Did I meet you in Queensland, maybe?
Maybe it was Byron. Did you come up for your first comedy festival I ran in the Big Joke? Were you?
No.
I don't think you came to that one. The big joke of that one was that the guy that was funding it ended up embezzling all the money. So that was...
That's a big joke. I've certainly done Ballina with you before, but that wasn't that long.
You've done Ballina. That's a good point.
I met you... Oh, gee.
Did we meet at the Gold Coast Arts Club? I actually think we met at the Gold Coast in that...
I reckon we
the
might
Gold
have.
Coast Arts Centre.
I reckon we might have.
Which is a great way of actually... You know, for me as someone that is also, I wear, you know, many hats, and one of them is as a promoter and booker as well as a comic, it's just such a great way to book when you work with people.
Yeah, true.
Because you get to really see how people work and how they are in a room from the inside rather than from the outside.
Yeah, if they're badly behaved or et cetera.
Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of... it's actually good. So I reckon it would be that. So it would probably be 15 years ago.
It was a while ago.
Or so.
I've got these questions I ask everyone. I'm going to ask you. So there's only three, so relax.
Yeah.
What was the last thing you cooked?
The last thing I cooked was the other night, and it was salmon with some dill. And I made a lovely mashed potato.
Oh.
And I think I pan-fried some... Brussels sprouts with asparagus and cashews and a little bit of sesame oil.
Sean McAuliffe was the last person I spoke to who cooked salmon. So it's obviously quite a healthy dish.
It's healthy. I think it's an older person's dish because we've sort of found out that salmon actually is a really great anti-inflammatory.
Yes.
So if you want to move, I just crave it all the time though. Like
salmon.
I'm craving it. Salmon. Big on the salmon.
What was the last thing you watched or listened to? Like, do you watch a lot of stuff, or...?
Yeah, I watched the Ricky Gervais Afterlife second season. Yeah. Finished it last night,
How was that?
So, I loved it.
Yeah.
I really loved it. It was really good. I had to watch... It's one of those ones I was waiting to watch the second season, but waiting... Because you know when you ate that thing you're going to watch with your partner?
Yeah.
And he hadn't watched... I'd watched the first season, but he hadn't watched it.
Oh, so you're waiting for him, yeah.
Yeah, so in the end, I said, I'll just re-watch the first season with you because I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And then watch the second season. I did laugh more in the first season. I think I enjoyed the first season more, but I loved how he didn't, which I really love, which is kind of where I'm going with my comedy. And you've got to be really careful not to become earnest. Earnestness is the death of comedy.
Yes.
It's
yes.
Awful.
Yes.
But as I'm getting older, I want what I do to have meaning. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Without being a sledgehammer, but I need it to have... But you can't be earnest. And that's really hard. And I think Ricky Gervais navigates that really well in that, like, the honesty and the tiny moment of real emotion just kind of... They're so hard-hitting.
Yeah, he does it really well, actually. That's one thing he does very well.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's so much integrity to the character and to that kind of complexity of human... experience, I guess. And comedy is intricately tied in with pathos.
Yes.
With true sadness and true seriousness. And I think as you get older, you realize, well, it doesn't have to be an age thing, but I think I've realized that more in myself, that all my tragedy, it's not just a smart joke. It's somehow all tied up in there. Yeah. With your real experience of your humanity and your struggle and your fucked upness.
And people can tell whether you're being honest too. one stage.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. They can smell it, can't they? Like, they just know when someone's talking about something outside of their experience because it feels inauthentic.
Yes.
It's like a stench. You go, someone just fart because I can smell something inauthentic. It's a horrible feeling. Yeah, it just feels. And you know people that do that, they're people that don't give themselves on stage. And I did that for a long time. Like, I watch people now and I'm just amazed because I'm teaching people. I try to teach people. The main thing I teach is nothing to do with technique or jokes or anything. It's what's your worldview? How do you see things? What do you think? And why are people going to be interested
in how
you see the world?
Yeah, what is it unique?
What are you offering on this conversation? What are you putting on the table here? And for a long time when I started, I think for the first 10 years, all I ever did was kind of emulate people that the styles of people that I admired.
Yeah, you know, that's true. Everyone does that, though. I reckon a lot of people
do. And it took a long time to work out that you have to emulate, you had to work out you. You know, and some people actually have it straight away. Like someone like Hannah Gadsby, who did my comedy course. She never bloody tells anyone though. I'm always going, just mention Mandy Nolan because that routine you did that you won Raw with. That routine, we sat and wrote that together.
Oh, with I remember the Map of Tasmania. The Map of Tasmania.
The whole thing of Smith's and all that. I went, we wrote that together.
Yeah.
We did that. And she was amazing. And I remember.
I remember seeing her. Yeah.
But when she walked into my class, it was like her worldview and who she was so, it was just there.
Yeah.
It was like a lens that everything went through. Now, not everybody has that.
No.
And some people will never get there and they always have that, you know, comics have that, or they're almost there. It's kind of like a rocky boat or something, or it's just that there's no focus. And sometimes it's focused and sometimes it's not. Well, for me, my process to get there took about 10 years before I really found my voice of who I was.
I remember meeting a guy in Sydney and he was like wearing a suit. This was years ago and he was speaking like this. And then he put he went backstage and put a flannel on and came out and went, "How you going, everybody?" And you're like, whoa, what happened to the... He was a lawyer. What happened to the lawyer? How's it going?
You're going,
like, what?
Then you don't trust either of the two of him.
No.
Like, you're just going, that's just, you know, who are you? Like, you dickhead.
Now, what's the last bit of... go on, sorry.
Yeah, no, you tell me.
My last question is the last bit of human contact you've had. Which is a very COVID question, but you're all free and easy up there, so...
Yeah, well, we are supposed to be distancing. I've got a show with Women Like Us show tonight. But two shows sold out in a room that holds 300. We have 70 people. So we're still... And we have the licensing police coming in.
Wow, you know, where's this?
This is in Mullumbimby. Yeah. It's a home show.
Hometown.
But, you know, I don't know that they're coming, but we've heard that they're, you know, there's so little on, it would be unlikely for them not to come and do a camp tonight. But I think the real challenge for us is, and I said to, you know, in doing this, is to go, okay, how do we come back in our industry in a way that we abide by the rules, that we're still working, because you're not making anywhere, you're not making, you know, the money's not that great, but it's something, but you are working.
Yeah.
It's just trying to innovate and work around all that kind of stuff. So for the last human contact was Ellen and I went to Harvey Norman today.
Oh, yeah.
to actually go and buy podcasting equipment, and they didn't have any.
No.
So then we sat on their couches and did a Facebook Live and then had to pretend that we were talking to my husband about buying a couch with David. Kept coming over and hassling us because they do not want you sitting on their furniture. So that's what we did today. We sat on all the furniture and then we went to Spotlight and bought wool.
Wow. Women like us.
Knitting and crocheting.
Yeah.
That's what you do. How exciting is it? I had a dream the other night, Dave. You know you're menopausal when you have a dream. I dreamt I went to a rug shop. And I bought a rug. And I went, oh, I used to dream about having sex.
Yeah.
Now I'm actually buying rugs. I can't even have excitement.
We've got to say, too, if anyone's in a regional area or a town and they want women like us to come, send Mandy and Alan a message on Facebook and get them there. And
we'd
also, before we finish, you should plug your books, which are still would still be available on Booktopia or on your website.
All the books are available.
And they're fantastic. your
What
books.
I Do If I Were You, Boyfriends We've All Had and Shouldn't Have, Home Truth, Women Like Us, and I've just finished writing a new book during this time. Well, I've actually put together, I've been a columnist for a long time for my local paper, which and for Mamma Mia. So I've written over 1,000 pieces.
Great.
So I've put together 100 of my best. It's called A Full Mandy, and that will be out later in the year.
Fantastic.
I just sent that to the publisher. So that's a good feeling.
Oh, good feeling. Well, thanks for talking to me, Mandy Nolan.
Thanks for being interested, Dave, and asking such good questions.
Oh, no, they're not.
You're good at that, aren't you?
Oh, no.
You're good at that.
Have a good gig tonight and tell that to Alan. Mandy Nolan, ladies and gentlemen.